Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. We have three cases on our calendar for today, all via Zoom oral argument. The third of which is this one, A23-1347, in the matter of the welfare of the child of DLP and IAP parents. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant, if you so choose. This is being recorded, and obviously it's being live streamed by Zoom. A recording is available after, it'll be available probably within a day or two. However, no other recordings are permitted. Counsel, you may, I know both of you are familiar with our procedures. So, counsel for appellant, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and you may begin.
John Mack for appellants. The district court found in finding number 13 that the appellants had overcome the presumption of unfitness.
Mr. Mack, it appears you're getting a little bit of an echo there. You may
Can
have.
you hear me now?
We can hear you, but we're getting an
Okay.
echo from you. Now you're on mute.
Unmute and get rid of that.
Yes, if there's another device that's close by, then
Okay, why don't you get rid of the other device? Okay. Just go in the other room and get rid of the phone. Okay. And finding number 18, the court heard additional testimony, I'm quoting now, and received additional exhibits related to the termination petition. The court noted at the beginning of the hearing that the purpose of the hearing was to present supplemental evidence. The court further noted the evidence from the original trial would also be considered in deciding the case. This was error. The error was in importing those findings from the original case when A, that case had been reversed, and B, the court never made a determination that the findings other than the presumption were made by clear and convincing evidence.
Counsel, how is that error?
Because I can't hear you now. Okay, well, we got to try again. Okay, I'm muting my...
Would it be possible to pause counsel's time just while he tries to sort out the issue?
Yes, it looks like it's paused. It appears to me that he has two different devices, one to speak into and then another to hear us. And without that other device in his room, he can't hear us. Is that correct, Mr. Mack? And we can't hear you speaking because you are on mute right now.
Try this. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear us?
I can.
Okay, well, if it's okay with the other panel members, I think it's a little annoying to have that echo, but that may be the best that we can do just to proceed.
Thank you.
Okay. So, counsel, my question for you is, and we can go ahead and start the clock in. Thank you, Marshall. My question to you is, you argue that it was error for the district court to consider the findings from the first hearing in which this court reversed and remanded, but that reversal was based on the application of the proper standard of review. It was not a reversal on the findings by the district court. So why can't the district court rely on those findings from the first time around this time around?
For several reasons. First, we don't know if those findings were made by clear and convincing evidence, because once you overcome the presumption, findings have to be made by clear and convincing evidence. We have no indication that they were. Second, that they were imported from the first hearing. And they could only be imported from the first hearing based upon either res judicata or collateral estoppel. And in order to do that, the court would have had to make binding findings that were upheld by this court. They weren't. And therefore, certainly they weren't made by, for example, other importation devices. And therefore, they couldn't be used by that court without having additional evidence that backed them up. The other problem is, as I pointed out in the second part of my brief, that over a year elapsed between the first findings and the second findings. And therefore, many of those findings may have been stale. So it seems to me that the court erred in relying on the second, in the second case on the findings made in the first case. Finally, it seems to me that if the court reverses and remands, it makes a complete reversal and remand and tells the court below, do it over. We don't know, for example, if those first findings would have been made by clear and convincing evidence or would have been enough for the court to grant palpable unfitness findings. One of the things that I'm going to argue a little later when I'm asking the court to do, if you agree with me when you remand the case, there are three possible things you can do. You can remand and ask the district court to indicate what findings it made by clear and convincing evidence in patent one. Or it could have a full retrial on the merits. Or, of course, it could dismiss the case and make this a CHIPS case instead.
Counsel, I guess it's not clear to me that the district court, in terms of our remand order, I think that, you know, the way it was described, and I'm certainly open to that it could have been more clear as an argument, but I think that we were pretty clear that it was reopening the record to introduce supplemental evidence as opposed to have a whole additional trial. So why wasn't the fact that our remand instructions were to introduce supplemental evidence as opposed to hold a new trial sufficient for the district court to rely on its prior findings?
Well, first of all, the Court of Appeals, with all due respect, didn't say that. It said it can take additional findings, but it didn't say it can rely also on the additional findings. So,
but isn't that implicit in the in supplemental? I mean, the language of the previous opinion was because any termination of parental rights must relate to the conditions that exist at the time of termination, and it must appear that the conditions giving rise to termination will continue for a prolonged indeterminate period, it will be necessary for the district court to reopen the record to allow the parties to introduce supplemental evidence. Therefore, we direct the district court to reopen the record on remand. And so, you know, the language used was supplemental, not, you know, a trial completely de novo, as you've been urging. And on top of that, the district court does make a finding that there is clear and convincing evidence after it describes what the evidence was, which includes that it incorporated the findings made in its first termination order. So why isn't that sufficient? Why should we find that the court did not follow the remand instructions?
Because a year had passed, B, there was evidence which tended to contradict those first findings, and third, there was no basis for the court, even with the instruction from the court, to import those matters. I think if the Court of Appeals had been explicit and said may rely without further testimony on those matters, it would have been fine. The court didn't do that. Moving to
counsel, I think the term supplemental, in which that term, by the way, this court explicitly relied on the JAK case. So that language is actually a quote from a prior case in which that same step had been taken. Supplemental means in addition to. And the district court, in its second order, said that it incorporated by reference the order from the first trial. So it relied on an incorporated reference, the prior facts, and then it made new factual findings as well. That seems to be consistent with this court's order of supplemental.
It does seem to me pretty clear that the facts found in the second hearing, the ones that testimony was made on, would have been insufficient to find palpable unfitness. What is not clear from the district court's order is whether palpable unfitness with the new information together with the prior information would have been sufficient to ground the finding of palpable unfitness, which leads me to my second point.
But what do we do with the credibility determinations that the district court made regarding the testimony that was taken at the second hearing? The court made a number of adverse credibility determinations to the parents, and it's seemingly relied heavily on those in deciding that the parents were that met the palpable unfitness ground. So you're not suggesting that we are not required to defer to those credibility determinations, are you?
No, but I'm saying that if all you have, if you buy my argument that they can't import patent one findings, the findings, even with the findings on credibility, wouldn't have been sufficient to ground palpable unfitness. They're pretty thin. We think that they didn't do as much. They used marijuana, which is now legal. They didn't make all their appointments. That certainly wouldn't indicate in and of itself palpable unfitness.
Even with counsel, I mean, you have to admit that even if marijuana is now legal, that legality applies to adults. It does not apply to a child who tests positive for marijuana in their system or the components of it, correct?
That's certainly true, but that happened 2 years ago. And that's why we get back to issue one. I'd like to move on, if I may.
Counsel, yeah. I have a specific question. I recall from the first case that one of the main arguments that was made by the county had to do with mother's testimony with regard to whether the termination with respect to the previous children had to do with abuse or whether the children had a bone disease. Was that issue further developed in the district court? And did your client continue to assert that the previous termination shouldn't have occurred?
Ms. Patton did. She did testify that there was some indication that the child had a brittle bone disease rather than that the parents had beaten the child.
At both hearings, she testified to that.
That's right.
Okay. But doesn't that fall under res judicata, though? I mean, because this court affirmed the district court's determination on that issue.
Yes, probably so. But I'm just answering the judge's question as to whether she was.
Why wouldn't that? I mean, that struck me in reading the district court's order as one of the biggest concerns. I understand your argument about marijuana use and about the parents' commendable change in outlook and improvement in their lives. I think the district court's concern, a lot of it seemed to go to a continued failure to acknowledge that a court had determined that the previous termination was based on serious abuse and persisting in the argument that this was based on brittle bone disease gave the district court serious concerns about mother's ability to protect the child. Why wouldn't that be enough for clear and convincing evidence of palpable unfitness?
Well, certainly it wouldn't if you couldn't import the findings in one. Two, the parents are really being asked to testify against themselves on something that at least the mother doubts.
Why wouldn't it be sufficient? I mean, that was my question is even without importing the findings from one, if mother testified at the rehearing that she continues to think that the children subject to the previous termination had brittle bone disease, then there's been sort of a reassertion of that evidence a year and a half later by mother, which would show that there hasn't been any progression on that issue during the pendency of these court matters.
But what difference does it make what she believes?
I think that the district court found that goes to whether or not she is aware of the seriousness of the termination that occurred before and whether or not she's fit to protect this child from similar things happening in the future if she was allowed to keep her parental rights. I think that's the finding.
And that brings me to the second issue. The district court, in my judgment, abused its discretion by relieving the county of efforts to investigate and provide services. On a palpable unfitness case, the county does not necessarily have to provide services, but it can. There's nothing that says it can't. And since the county was no longer entitled to rely on the presumption, evidence regarding the present condition of the appellants was necessary, particularly with regard to the provision of services. The evidence that was presented, missed appointments and so forth, would hardly have been sufficient to ground the finding of palpable unfitness if this had been a trial de novo. And I submit, I know that the court may disagree with me, but I submit that this was or should have been a trial de novo. At least the district court should have revisited the issue because the court's initial determination to stop providing services was made when the court believed that the presumption applied. In order to find palpable unfitness under the clear and convincing standard, the county should have had extensive contacts with the parents after the remand. Secondly, the best interest standards would be decided on a trial level, and best interest was hardly explored at all. All we have is a conclusory opinion from the gal that the best interest of the child was to terminate the parental rights. No new investigation, few new reports. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. The timer is set for you. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And Mr. Mack, if you can put yourself on mute so we don't get any feedback, that'd be helpful. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Matthew Hogan, and I am the Chippewa County attorney. I represent Chippewa County Family Services here, the public service agency that was involved with filing the termination of parental rights and involved in this termination proceeding. I want to start with some of the issues that have been raised by the court. Initially, I was going to start with just kind of going through Mr. Max and the appellant's brief and kind of laying out why I think their arguments fail or are based on self-serving evidence. The first issue that was raised is whether there should be a new trial or a supplemental evidentiary hearing. Mr. Mack did not represent either parent in the district court matter. He has represented them in both appeals. The father was represented by Attorney John Mueller, and Don Weber represented mother. Following the court's remand order, obviously the district court got it and set it for a continued pretrial on May 31st, 2023. That hearing was attended by myself as well as representatives of Chippewa County Family Services. The parents, Mr. Mueller and Ms. Weber, were also there. At that hearing, there was a discussion and the parties agreed just to have, as the court had indicated, a supplemental evidentiary hearing. There was a full, almost two full days of trial before, which I will refer to as order one as being the initial order that found termination that was remanded, and order two being the one that came out in 2023. But there was discussion about there already being 2 days of trial leading up to order one. And the parties agreed. I don't have a transcript of that hearing, but the parties generally agreed. My recollection is just to have this supplemental hearing I think that was appropriate under the circumstances. The court, when it remanded, did indicate that the district court had applied the wrong standard and to look again to see if they had rebutted that presumption. So all parties agreed, and we had that evidentiary hearing on July 26, 2023. Now, Mr. Mack would argue that it needs to be a trial de novo. We need to start all over. But as Your Honor had raised, or the court had raised, there were numerous findings in Order 1 and Order 2 about the credibility and some of the damning evidence or findings that the court found. To have a trial de novo would really give the opportunity to parents to try and explain away some of these things that the court had found, which point to the fact that they
Mr.
are...
Huggins. Mr. Huggins, can I interrupt you for a moment? I want to ask you about one of the points that Mr. Mack made regarding the best interest of the child. You agreed that it was the petitioner's burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that termination was in the child's best interest, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
As I read paragraphs 29 to 32 of the district court's order, there are four paragraphs that have very, very general, and to use Mr. Mack's words, conclusory language about why it's in the best interest to terminate the parental rights here. I mean, the closest this gets to any sort of particularized finding is still very general, and that's paragraph 31. Just generally saying, while both the child and the parents have some interest in maintaining the parent-child relationship, those interests are significantly outweighed by the child's need for a safe and stable home with those who can provide long-term protection and care for the child as he grows. Why should we view the findings here as sufficient rebut the argument that Mr. Mack has put forward, that the district court abused its discretion in finding clear and convincing evidence that a TPR was in the child's best interest?
That is a good point, Your Honor. I think a court, you know, when presented with cases like this, I'm assuming starts to gauge kind of what is presented and what the findings are based on different courts. This is different than and that's a stereotype by me or an assumption by me, from a lot of the things that come in front of this court that's regarding a termination. Your usual case, or what we typically have, is we've got a CHIPS, we've got a case plans that are provided to the court. Those case plans are worked by the parents, and ultimately the parents succeed and the CHIPS is ultimately closed, or they reach statutory timeframes, 6 months or 12 months. And then at that point, it moves on to a termination. And this court didn't hear a lot of evidence about this child. It only heard that it was a child, that the child was born. Before the child was born, the mother, Coney, had received concerns from the hospital that she was using THC, that the child, when it was born, did test positive. Their meconium tested positive for THC. So really, this is a different case than your traditional one, because we don't have a lot of information about the child. What we have about the child is this is a child that tested positive for THC at birth. There's concerns that mother had been using, and that other than those findings, generally this was a healthy child. So I do feel that while they are limited in this case, Your Honor, I do believe they are sufficient. I do agree.
When was the last time the parents were allowed visitation with the child?
My understanding was
did that happen on remand?
No, it did not. It did not happen on remand. In 2022, I believe it was the fall of 2022. If your honor bears with me, I want to point out some of the services that were provided to the court. I'd ask the court, when looking at this, to look at order one. This is the order from 2022, paragraphs 30 and 31 specifically. That'd be page 4 of 21 of, and this would be addendum 29 of Mr. Mack's brief. The court makes very specific findings about the limited services that were provided by Chippewa County Family Services. So as Mr. Mack had noted, when the Chippewa County Family Services filed its termination of parental rights petition, it did note specifically that there was a prior termination, involuntary termination of a child or children, in this case, two children from a 2019 Kanduay County case. Now, Mr. Mack argues that the court has discretion, which it does, but that the court abused its discretion in not requiring Chippewa County Family Services to provide services. The relevant statute is 260.012 subdivision or paren A, paren 2. The last sentence of paragraph A reads, reasonable efforts to prevent placement and for rehabilitation and reunification are always required except upon a determination by the court that a petition has been filed stating a prima facie case, the relevant parent.
Visitation is distinct from reasonable efforts, right? I mean, it falls under a different statute. A decision by the district court that a prima facie case of that there was a prior involuntary termination and that there's no reasonable efforts, that doesn't necessarily relieve the county of the obligation to provide visitation.
Am I wrong in that? But the court dictated the ability to have visitation with continued sobriety. And so what I'm trying to make multiple arguments or cover multiple arguments. So if the court would just bear with me here, I'll try to get through this. But it says reasonable efforts to prevent placement and for rehabilitation and reunification are always required except upon a determination by the court that a petition has been filed stating a prima facie case. Two, the parental rights of the parents to another child have been terminated involuntarily. The county did that here. Attached to the brief of appellants is the petition filed by Chippewa County Family Services. It specifically notes the prior 2019 termination, and it specifically at paragraph 10 requests that the county be relieved. So the court was well within its rights when it did this. Now, Mr. Mack in his brief argues, well, if it's still good law, I've not been provided any information to provide that it's not good law. And to me, the reading here from the legislature is relatively clear that they have the ability to do that. And that's what the court did here. So after that determination was made by the court at the EPC hearing or the admit deny, I can't represent which one it was. The parents' attorney said, well, we would like at least the court to require there to be some testing. So if the court looks at order one, paragraphs 30 and 31, that being addendum 29 to appellant's brief, it goes through how the parents, the appellants, pretty much failed to comply with any of that. Paragraph 31 references a calendar that was produced by Otina Fanschmidt, the child support worker, child protection worker here. And it talks about that initially on June 23rd, Dina tested positive for THC, John did not test. Then we go July 20th and 22, Dina tested negative, but John tested positive. And then it goes through that in sometime in August, early August 22, the parents moved to St. Cloud. Initially, the testing had been occurring in Wilmer, which is approximately 30 miles away from Clara City where the parents were living. And then when they moved to St. Cloud, Family Services worked to get testing up there, but ultimately they just stopped testing. And when they stopped testing, the court cannot ensure that they were abstaining, and there was no further visits, my understanding, from sometime in the mid to late summer of 2022.
And they never challenged the determination of visitation? They didn't challenge that?
I mean, I could have been in passing arguments. It certainly wasn't any type of written memorandum or motion, but I certainly can't represent to the court that or point to any specific note as it relates to that. Can I move on, Your Honor?
Thank you.
So then the other thing that was raised by Mr. Mack is that the court, it's unclear whether the court provided or relied on clear and convincing evidence. I agree that order one, I believe, is completely void of any reference to clear and convincing evidence, because at that time the court was working under the assumption or was working with the idea that they had not met their burden. And the court did not go into that analysis about whether it was clear and convincing that they were culpably unfit under that basis. But if the court looks at order two, the most recent order at paragraphs 15 and 28 of the conclusions of law, the court makes those specific findings about clear and convincing. Paragraph 15 starts out, page 12 of 16 of order two, there is clear and convincing evidence that Dina and John Padin are culpably unfit to be the parties to the parent and child relationship. We move forward to paragraph 28. Based on the above, there is clear and convincing evidence as required by Minnesota Statute 260C.301 that Dina and John Padin are palpably unfit. So I do feel that the court provided or presented the correct standard here in the fence that it is clear and convincing. I just want to go through kind of the three arguments that the appellants have raised in their brief. The first, the parents presented enough evidence to rebut the presumption. Mr. Mack kind of goes through different analyses of, well, did they rebut it? Did they not? I think this is very clear to the Court of Appeals, or should be, that the district court clearly found that the court or that the appellants had met their burden. If the court looks at order two, paragraphs 12 and 13 of the conclusions of law. Paragraph 12 reads, the parents produced evidence to rebut the statutory presumption of unfitness in the form of their own testimony, testimony of friends and relatives, and various documentation. 13, the court found on the record the Padines had produced enough evidence to rebut the statutory presumption. That did occur at trial. Initially, the court, within 15 minutes, indicated there is enough evidence here and the presumption has changed to Chippewa County Family Services. The court goes on at paragraph 13 to say the burden then shifted to petitioner to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the Padines are palpably unfit to parent the child. The presumption of fitness ceased to apply once the parent successfully rebutted the presumption. That is clearly laid out by the court. That is clearly laid out that they have met their burden, that the county then had the burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence a statutory basis, and as Your Honor had raised before, that it was in the best interest of the child. There is a third element that can apply, that in order to terminate parental rights, that there had to be reasonable efforts to reunify or prevent placement. In this case, this is different under that 260.012, in that the court made the determination when presented with that TPR petition to relieve itself or to relieve the county of having to make those efforts. The second issue raised by appellant is that the county did not present enough evidence to support findings by clear and convincing evidence that they were palpably unfit under 260C.301. The findings in Order 1 and Order 2 are extensive. The conclusions of law in Order 2, paragraphs 11 through 27, apply those findings to the statutory and case law relevant to the termination. There are sufficient, adequate findings to provide for the finding that the court ultimately made that the termination or that the county had moved by or proven by clear and convincing evidence that the parents were palpably unfit under a statutory basis. And then the third argument, which I have already raised or explained at least the position of the county, is the appellants argue that the district court abused its discretion in not requiring reasonable efforts pursuant to 260.012. The statute is clear. The petition specifically provided that there was a prior termination. It had the date of the termination, and then there was a specific request to be relieved of efforts. That's prima facie showing that there was a prior involuntary termination. The court had clear statutory authority to make that determination, which it did. So the court did not abuse its discretion in that. I have nothing further unless there's any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Clock at that may begin.
But the court did not have a right to rely on the statute not to provide services, given that the case had been remanded and that the court couldn't rely on the presumption. Just having allegations of palpable unfitness is not in and of itself sufficient to relieve the county of the duty to provide services.
But doesn't the statute particularly point to that there was a prior termination, not to the rebuttable presumption, excuse me?
I think they're the same thing. I think that the court could no longer say that the prior
that there had been a prior termination. I mean, obviously the district court could still say that there had been a prior termination.
Oh, that it can say, but it can't rely upon anymore the prior termination.
Isn't that what the statute says? It relies on the prior termination, not on the presumption of palpable unfitness.
Well, if it relies upon the prior termination, it seems to me that the statute and RDL make it pretty clear that the court has to make some additional findings if it's going to require no services, because the first palpable unfitness is based upon the prior unfitness findings. Furthermore, and I'm arguing this fairly strongly, I think the district court abused its discretion in not doing it, because it is going to have to find that termination is still in the best interest of the child and can't rely upon the prior determination for that. That one has to be made de novo, because we're always concerned primarily with the best interests of the child. And if you don't provide services and you don't provide visitation, which by the way is a different issue than services, how do you know that it is still not in the best interest of the child to terminate. The findings that the court made with regard to issue two, or let's call it patent two, suffer from two problems. First of all, the patents made rather elaborate testimony, much more than is the case, that they no longer, or were never, or were not now, palpably unfit. So it seems to me that the county had some duty to try to refute what they were saying, because they rebutted the presumption and they rebutted a lot of the claims with regard to the current situation regarding the children. They indicated, for example, they had housing, that they had or were soon to have employment, that they'd had treatment, that they'd had various things indicating that they were now fit. And the county did nothing to refute that. All they did is rehash patent one, provided a few indications on the basis of the county's testimony that they were testing positive for THC, which, by the way, the court and counsel knew that that would shortly become legal anyway.
Counsel, I just want to clarify one issue that had been brought up and respondent brought up, and I wanted to bring it up with you. And that's the first issue that you had initially raised in your principal brief of the burden of persuasion, and that the district court, I think the initial argument or even question was whether or not the district court found that parents had rebutted the initial presumption of palpable unfitness. Would you agree that the findings by the district court, particular findings of fact, paragraphs 12 and 13, that the district court did in fact determine that the parents had produced evidence to rebut that statutory presumption, and therefore the burden shifted to the county to prove by clear and convincing evidence that they were palpably unfit?
Oh, I would agree with that. The only reason I raised that argument is I'm always a little bit concerned that the Court of Appeals may not agree with the district court.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
No, I'm supporting that claim. It's just that I'm being a little bit cautious. Thank you.
I understand.
I have nothing further.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and for your briefs. We will be submitting the case is now submitted to us, and we will be issuing an opinion within the statutory time frame. That is our last oral argument for our calendar today, so the court is now in recess. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.